Hi, and thanks for joining me. My name is Mike Bruska. I'm a partner at Davis and Bruska, and for quite some time now, I've solely prosecuted nursing home neglect and abuse cases. I'm on the committee in New Jersey that does this kind of work, and I've been the chair of the National American Association for Justice Nursing Home Group as well. Today, what I want to talk about is signs of trouble or red flags that families come across. They may not understand what it means and they may not understand the significance of it, but I do. I have represented hundreds and hundreds of families in neglect and abuse cases in long-term care facilities, and I will tell you that there is a very common pattern that you see, and I want to talk about what is that pattern, what's underlying that pattern, why it's a big problem, and what you can do about it. So let's talk about these signs of trouble or red flags that you'll see. They are almost all universally derived from understaffing. That is, because the facility doesn't have enough people in the building, you're going to start seeing very common things. I don't care if you're in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Texas, or California, you're going to see these same red flags, and understanding what they are and what they mean is going to be important, because a lot of times family members don't know what this means, or they don't understand how big a problem it can be. Now, many people will pick up on the easy things, that is to say, for example, when you're in the facility, you just can't find anyone to help. Oftentimes, when you go in there and something needs to get done, which is pretty obvious, for example, if your loved one is in a is soiled and you want to get them out of it, right? And there's nobody around, right? Because the first instinct is to go do it yourself. Of course, a lot of times families are also told not to conduct activities of daily living without a CNA. And so they want to get help. And there's just no one around. And what you're seeing is usually not an unusual event, right? Oftentimes, when you go to check into a facility, when you start out, there's a sign-in book, and oftentimes people sign it in. After a week or so, there's nobody at the front desk. They just walk right in. These are signs of understaffing that they're seeing. Okay. And the problem with understaffing is when you don't have enough people to get things done in the building, that's when bad things occur. So what you see is believing. Seeing is believing. But there's other signs that when you have that together with visually noticing understaffing is really important. The first time most people realize there's a serious problem is with the call bell light. So a call bell light, if you don't know, is it's a device that's attached to a cord. It is under the law supposed to be within a person's reach. That is, it's supposed to be right there. If they're in a bed, it's supposed to be either tied to the bed or right there so that they can use it if they need it. For people that are quadriplegic, they have ones that they'll breathe into that should notify the staff they need help. And what happens is when these are activated, there is a light that'll go out or will go on out in the hallway above the door, and it will usually notify someone at the nurse's station. There's different iterations of the call bell, but that's basically how it works. This is usually the first time that people will notice the understaffing problem. And some of it is they don't understand the expectations. I'm telling you. Staff are generally trained to respond to call bell lights within 3 to 5 minutes. Okay. The families I represent, they don't come for 10 minutes or 40 minutes. Now, it's one thing if a family member is with the resident, but it's another thing when the resident pushes it and needs to get to the bathroom and there's nobody to get them there, right? So they push the call bell light. I mean, when you got to go to the bathroom, like waiting 30 minutes, or when you don't know when someone's going to come, that's a real problem. The reason people aren't responding to the call bell isn't because you picked an unlucky moment when everyone's busy with an emergency, right? What's happening is there's not enough staff to go respond to it, and the few staff they have are doing something that they can't walk away from in that moment. That's what that means, right? If you're seeing call bell response time, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30, I have seen 30 minutes an hour. I actually had a client and he complained to maintenance because he told them that he didn't think that the call bell light worked because it took so long for someone to respond to it. And that was actually documented in the chart. that they had to have maintenance come in and make sure it was working. So that is a big red flag, all right? Because, and it makes people uncomfortable because they realize, well, what happens when I'm not here? And I understand that. Another issue with the call bells, and you will see this especially towards the end of the shift. There's usually three shifts, the 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., the 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., and the 11 to 7 shift, right? The aide will come into the room and turn the call bell off and say, I will be back in a bit, and they never come back, right? This happens all the time. Now, one of the reasons this happens is because that they may not want a supervisor noticing that there's six call bell lights on their unit. Another reason is that facilities will actually audit the time it takes for staff to respond to a call bell request. And once they shut it off, it stops timing it. And so their times look really good, even though they're not doing any work. And so understanding this call bell system and how it works and how it's supposed to work is really critical. So generally speaking, staff are trained to respond to them in 3 to 5 minutes. And if you're waiting longer than that, that's a problem. And you may want to talk to a unit supervisor, but we'll discuss that later. Another big red flag in my experience, you will see with residents that don't go to the dining areas. Now, nursing homes will have a general area where people can go eat together, but many people take their meals in their rooms. It's very common. They'll be delivered on some kind of schedule. And it's important to understand that if you come to visit your loved one and there's a tray of cold food sitting on the table next to your resident or on the bed tray, that's a big red flag. That means that an aide came in to a room for someone who needs assistance with feeding, put the food down, and walked out. Now, the most time-intensive task for a CNA is hand feeding a resident, but it's a critical one, right? Nutrition is, aside from the fact that it's just basic human decency, it's also critical in things like healing wounds, and good nutrition is important for good health. So this is a seriously important task, but it gets overlooked because there's not enough aides to do the task that needs to get done. So if you come in there and you're finding cold food, that's what happened. An aide came in there, put it down and left and didn't ask if they needed help, and your loved one may need help. That's indicated, should be indicated in a care plan, and the staff should be very well aware of who needs that assistance. And generally speaking, people that take meals in their rooms will require at least some kind of assistance, like a setup assistance, a queuing, or whatever it happens to be. I've seen many cases of malnutrition and severe unplanned weight loss, and there's no documentation that the person's getting fed. I've seen instances where the dietitian is not notified of severe weight loss. I have that all the time in some of these facilities. So this critical key task is a major red flag that the facility is understaffed and that there's going to be problems. So if you're finding cold food in your loved one's room, that's a major problem. Clothing, right? Now, in our state, you have a right to wear what you want to wear. Most states have some kind of corollary. When you're coming to visit on, say, a Saturday afternoon, because you have the day off, and your mom is still in her nightclothes. Okay, it's the afternoon. She should have been dressed in the morning and given breakfast. That didn't happen. And the reason it didn't happen is because the aide who's assigned to her doesn't have enough time to do the things that need to get done because they're understaffed, right? Just simply dressing people or conversely, not having the time to dress them appropriately is a major red flag. So if you're finding your loved one in their bedclothes in the afternoon, that's a red flag. Before I did this, I wouldn't have seen the significance of that. I have kids that are teenagers. They'll be in their bedclothes at 6 o'clock in the evening. So I don't know that a lot of people will appreciate that that's a red flag in a facility. That's not supposed to happen. And that facility is sending you signals that they're understaffed and you may not be aware. So if you see that, that's another red flag. Okay, generally bathing and grooming. Now people usually pick up on this, but there's some tricks that I can give you to look a little further beyond that. Many people will recognize when someone's hair is not being brushed. For men, they're not being shaved. which I find is a basic human dignity task, right? But these tasks are, again, they're time intensive and carried out by the certified nurse aides. And when they're understaffed, these things will fall by the wayside. All right. So if you're seeing things like dirt under the nails, that's another sign that they're not getting the basic grooming done. Usually people are on a shower schedule and making sure that that's met. I will tell you, there's often a document in your loved one's chart that's saying when they are supposed to be bathed and whether or not it got done. And you can ask for that and be sure it's getting done. We all know when someone's not being kept clean. So if you're seeing that, those signs, you can ask to see that document and be sure your person is getting cleaned appropriately. Another time I see problems with dentures, they get, quote, lost, close quote, which I still don't understand how dentures get lost when a person almost never leaves their room, but they do, or not being cleaned, which is frankly disgusting. This is basic human dignity, and it needs to get done. But I don't think these aides are psychopaths. That is, they're not doing this on purpose. What's happening is they don't have enough people. And so if you're finding issues with the dentures, right, that's another sign of understaffing. This is a tip I got from a medical expert I used who used to be a medical director in a nursing home. And when he wanted to be sure his staff were cleaning their residents appropriately, he would look between their toes because that's the last place that gets cleaned. And he would look between their toes. So I would encourage you to do that. If you have any concerns about the grooming or bathing of your resident, look between the toes and see what you find there. There are some very obvious signs and symptoms of understaffing. Another one is when you're finding your loved one soiled all the time. This one really bothers me. So many people go to an understaffed nursing home. They're continent. That is, they go to the bathroom on their own, but the facility will want to put them in a diaper right away. And the reason they want to do that is because they don't have enough staff to take someone to the bathroom, because that's another time-intensive task. If a CNA takes someone to the bathroom, they have to assist them out of bed, they have to assist them to the toilet, they have to wait for them to finish, and then they have to assist them in their cleaning and then get back to bed. And that takes a lot of time. And when they don't have, if they're assigned to 12 residents on the day shift, that's very difficult, if not impossible, to do that. Oftentimes, they'll leave the person. I've had instances where cognitively impaired people are left on the toilet for 40 minutes, and then they have serious injuries from falls, like fractures and brain bleeds. I've had that fact pattern many, many times. And so that's why they want to put them in a diaper. Now, the problem is that if you don't have enough aides to get people to the bathroom, you don't have enough aides to get them out of their diapers quickly, okay? Not only is it is very undignified and bothers me. Sometimes I'll talk to caregivers and I'll say, well, this person was in a soiled diaper for 30 minutes. Almost in a way, it's an expectation that this happens sometimes. I think it should never happen. I will tell you this, or I put it to people in these terms. If you are very hungry and you go to a restaurant, you're starving, and you go there and you sit down and you're waiting for 30 minutes before someone brings you a glass of water and a menu, you won't make it. You're leaving before that. And then you're going to give them a nasty review on your phone as soon as you walk out the door, right? Because you've been neglected all that time. Envision if you're just in a soiled diaper and you just want to be clean, right? You just want to be clean. That's it. That one particularly bothers me personally. But if you find that, that's a major red flag. I remember one time I was taking a deposition in a nursing home, and someone at the nurse's station had a bowel movement. And the staff are complaining about the smell and spraying Lysol. And I just thought to myself in the middle of my deposition, I wanted to go out there and be like, can someone just please change this person? Instead of complaining about it, that'd be great. And embarrassing and humiliating them in this public area. Okay, so the problem with that, aside from the dignity issues, is if you don't get people out of a soiled diaper quick enough, you start to get skin breakdown, and that leads to bed sores, which are universally almost universally a sign of neglect. There are very, very few instances, in particular in a long-term care facility, where a person will have a medical condition that will make a bed sore 100% unavoidable. That is, there are conditions, they will occur in hospitals and ICUs where that kind of thing happens, but in a long-term care facility, that almost should never, ever happen. And not getting people out of soiled diapers will directly lead to the beginnings of skin breakdown. And if you ask for your residence chart, you will see phrases like MASD, which stands for moisture-associated skin dermatitis, or excoriation, right? Or stage two pressure injury. A lot of that is just from poor incontinence care, right? Just not getting people out of their diapers quick enough and keeping them clean and dry. And of course, I have other podcasts on pressure injuries or bed sores. Now, so what do you do about it? Okay, you're starting to find these signs as a problem because your loved one's already in the facility. Sometimes transferring them is very difficult, especially if they're on Medicaid, and that can be hard to move them. Now, number one, if I saw enough of these red flags, you want to bring that to someone's attention right away. Now, I get the discomfort of it because the whole reason a person is in a long-term care facility is because you can't care for them at home. And people don't want to, quote, rock the boat, close quote. I've heard that phrase 1,000 times from 1,000 different families doing this kind of work. And I understand that. I understand that. It can be very uncomfortable also because you have to go and you have to push back, right? You have to push back. So if it's a small thing, each unit is going to have aides, nurses, and a unit supervisor or a charge nurse. That is the person who is in charge of that unit. And you may want to discuss directly with the charge nurse what is happening. Now, like I said, I've deposed countless aides and nurses. I can't ever recall deposing a psychopath. So they may not be aware that this is a problem. They may have a new aide. They may have an aide that's just not that good. And they may not be aware of that. So bringing this to their attention is kind of the first step, right? So if you're waiting for 15 minutes for a call bell light, and then you go out, go get help, telling the charge nurse, you do understand, like, I was waiting for 15 minutes, and certainly if you record that or have some documentation of that, it's going to be very hard for them to think you're a crazy person. So that's the first step. Now, if you're not getting satisfaction there, you take it up to the director of nursing. Director of nursing is the head nurse in the facility, and she is charged with running the entire nursing department. Again, she might not be aware of problems on a particular unit at a particular time. So bringing these up and making sure there's a document, a record of it as well, is important. And now you can always ask for a care conference for your loved one, right? This is where they're going to have to bring the team that's supposedly caring for your resident together to discuss care issues. And if you have those care issues, you can call for a care conference. They usually do these quarterly. They should do them more frequently than that. And they're going to use this meeting to generate care plans and things of that nature. Your loved one may be declining in their activities of daily living and require more assistance, and the staff aren't running it up the chain, and you can do that for them, right? And be sure that your loved one's getting the assistance they need. Okay, you can also bring it to the administrator's attention. In some of these facilities, I think administrators, and this is the top person in the building, this is the director of nursing's boss, I think sometimes they spend half their day avoiding families, but going to their office, I will tell you this, I have deposed thousands of administrators. And when I ask them, how do you ensure good employee morale? They almost universally say, I have an open door policy. Well, let's take them at their word that they have an open door policy. And if they have that with their staff, then they should have it with their residents. Now, there's also resident council meetings. Now, resident council meetings, and they may have family council meetings. These are separate from the facility. They're not run by the facility. Okay, so resident council meetings are run by the residents. Family council meetings are run by the family. This is a forum where you can come and speak to usually the activities director or social worker that runs them, or that participates, I should say, doesn't run them, but participates in them directly. The food's terrible. Don't do mashed potatoes anymore. What was that? Why is my unit understaffed? You know, this aide, it just doesn't care, right? Whatever it happens to be, you can do that at the resident council meeting and at the family council meeting. So that's another forum to get your complaints written down somewhere and in front of somebody, right? Of course, you can also complain to the Department of Health, your state Department of Health, whatever that happens to be. We usually have a hotline where you can call, or you can send an email, or you can write a letter. I will tell you this, though. Usually people have a lot to say when they're upset. I would caution you to be very focused on a complaint. And additionally, if you ask for your resident's medical records, they have to give them to you. If you're power of attorney, they have to give them to you in 2 working days. If you have documentation that's a problem, right, I would include that when you complain to the State Department of Health. Now, you don't know who's going down there. You don't know who's doing the complaint. Generally, what they'll do is when they receive complaints, they'll go to a facility. They'll pull 3 resident charts. So the facility, you know, supposedly doesn't know who complained. And then they'll dig deeper if they find it necessary to do so. But these are ways that you can advocate for your loved one if you find any of these red flags that I discussed or these signs of trouble. I hope you never find these if you have someone in long-term care. But if you do start seeing some of these signs or symptoms of neglect, these are signs of a systemic understaffing issue, which can lead to big problems later on down the road. So addressing these early can be critical and key. So thank you for your attention today, and thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great day.